Hello?
You're Hello? Hilarious. Let's do it later tonight. And now it's 6:44 a.m.
Do you want to do an intro to two people you haven't spoken to?
Yeah, sure. Is it Christopher Hardes and Sarah John?
Gee whiz, you're mind reader. Listen, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but do you remember Buck? I've got a whisper because everybody's asleep in the house. But this is the only time I've got. We've turned into sort of like, you know, like whenever like comics used to bring out a special. It's like, I don't think we've got any. I think this is just a podcast for me and you now, because I don't, have we done one this year?
We did the running show.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Oh, that's all right then. We're okay.
And we did that many in the running show. We've kind of ticked off till about June, I reckon.
Yeah. So, right. Do you remember Buck Rogers?
The Sundance Kid.
Who's that?
Is that not Buck Rogers? Maybe no, not then.
Buck Rogers, he was a spaceman in the 1980s.
No, absolutely not then.
Right. What happened, right? He was on a mission on a space shuttle. Obviously, this isn't a true story. This is a program. He was on a mission on in a space shuttle, and then he got frozen in time, and then he ended up in the future. That's what's happening with these two episodes that the people are about to listen to.
Amazing.
Because I'd completely forgotten what their names were. I have to apologise first
Sarah
of all.
Sarah John and Christopher.
Yeah. Christopher Hardes, right. He's going to be the first podcast of this special that we're putting on. Met him in the Algarve last year whenever I was at the Alt. I'll have the bigger... Will that ever happen? I don't know. But my friend Bruno, who organises it, well, he's running across Tasmania at the moment. And just things happen, don't they, when the New Year's happens? Because, like, March is happening on Thursday, and I've got the new episode of Shogun to watch. Do you remember Shogun in the 80s?
No.
It's a bit of an 80s theme going on. Anyway, so I spoke with Chris. He DNF'd the biblical storm night. I think it was the first night. You know what? Portugal, you don't put storms and lightning and biblical showers down as a rule whenever you go up to Faro.
Yeah,
that happened on that night. It's a fabulous place. But he was he fell over badly. So I met him, did a really good podcast with him on the scene in the back of the pickup van in the middle of the night. And it was really exciting. It was so exciting, I completely deleted it instead of pressing save. And I was like, oh my God, I'm broaching on being a journalist here. Wow. We got the rain, and then I said, oh, thanks very much, I'm just going to save it, and I deleted it. And you know, whenever you just look up and you've done something completely wrong.
Brilliant.
like a dog, I was like, oh yeah, dear me. So yeah, that so he's the first one, really nice guy. And then we've got Sarah Don. Right, listen to this. Sarah Don started and has got something called I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly because I haven't had my get-up coffee. There's a link. Sarah Don is the founder, the inventor of Food Bank Run. Brilliant idea.
Cool.
Clubs or groups or just a group of people can get the list of what their local food bank needs, pick it up and then take it in. Of an evening, or just take it in at a separate time. I went to see the food bank in Pwllheli, and they're in a church called St. Peter's. I went to see them last week, took them some beans. And what we're going to do here is we're just going to put it out there to the local community, because we've got quite a few walkers as well as runners. And then we're going to drop them off in, I think it's going to be the community hotel, the Tower Hotel, and then we're going to take them across.
Brilliant.
Sort of thing. So if you're wanting to do a food bank run, Google Food Bank or Facebook Food Bank. Sarah's such a lovely lady. You can ask her any questions. But say if there's a group of you, if you contact your food bank beforehand, just to see if you can go there of an evening or if it's to be a drop-off. But they'll give you a list as well of what's short for that specific area. I'll let you listen to the show, but Sarah explains, you know, it's all done confidentially. If people, because it's, everything's got a bit expensive, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's all done confidentially if you do want to pick things up and so on. But we're going to do an incentive with all our races. I thought, well, why not? People can bring a tin of beans or
that's
a tin
of... That's
a great
idea at the start of a race.
Yeah.
Almost have like a drop-off point everyone brings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, if ever race directors do it,
great.
And a lot of the time we've got some perishables, like, you know, because all food banks, that they'll have 90% of the stuff is tinned or, you know, stuff where they put dates on, they've got an audit. The food bank teams work really hard, but there's always some places for, say, perishables like fruit or Coca-Cola and stuff. So, but I thought, right, so what we're going to do with all the beautiful, brutal races is people can bring a tin of their choice, or, you know, a packet of pasta.
Yeah.
I'll send them a list. But also for the She Ultra, each woman is to bring a tin and a sanitary
great idea
packet, because
so expensive.
Because we've got, you know, the She Ultra in April, and working with She Races and, you know, taking advice from, you know, women runners, women walkers, but also Sophie over at She Races. And, you know, we've got sanitary products as well as hygiene products at all the aid stations. And it's an expense for the household if you've got financial difficulties. So, yeah, we're asking women to drop that off. Talking about the She Ultra. Oh, I've got my admin hat on now. It's something like 60 days out. If you're listening to this, ladies and gentlemen, it's the 27th of March. She Ultra, 550 women coming to the Slim Peninsula. One, it's a vessel for fundraising for the women's cancer charities.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I can't put into words. We've been having Reckies, which is a guided walk for anybody that's new to running or walking and so on. We've had almost 400 women come since January for these. We've got the next one, got one coming up this weekend and so on. So I'm very, very excited. We're gonna have to do a She Ultra special. We've now got a third presenter on the show, but she's just having a bit of a light. Huh?
Is she sleeping?
She's sleeping. She's been out for a pee pee poo poo. She doesn't understand. Do you want to go for a poo or a pee pee? You said pee pee poo poo. You've got to say it in like one word.
Maybe French.
Coco, yeah. Well, whenever she's having a shit or a wee, we have to ask her in French. She's got French bowels. We've got a golden receiver. Hello, golden receiver. Yeah,
a golden receiver.
Yeah, hello, come in, golden receiver. Is that your receiver, Miguel? Somebody's just got up there, so you can hear a barking in the back. But yeah, so this is the problem. Like, whenever I mention her, I forget everything I was supposed to be doing.
Have you just woken up the house?
As a collective, me and Coco, yes, we have. You know where the presenters started to whisper a little bit.
Right, wait, put your phone down, lie on the sofa and pretend you've been asleep the whole time.
Yeah, right. This was going to be a longer intro, but I'm going to go enjoy the show. Bye. Oh, shit. Bye. Bye.
See you, bye.
Hey, Christoph.
How are you?
You can hear me?
I can hear you very good.
Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely. It's always... I went through about 3 years, well, I think up until about two episodes ago, that every single episode, it was quite fleeting the first couple of minutes, and then we'd be phoning people back up. So great stuff, Christoph. How are you doing before we go into the actual show? How was everything getting ready for Christmas?
Yeah, that's I didn't have so much stress. It's just a small family, so I don't have a lot of stress about that. I'm fine now. I was a little bit ill 2 weeks ago, after we came back from Portugal. Did a longer run that weekend and was, as always in the last weeks, so much rain, so I catched a cold and... last week was a little bit difficult, but now I'm fine. Everything is okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about how we've how we've met on the show now. So for listeners, I first met Christoph, I think, in a kitchen in Portugal. It was the kitchen. Or did I see you before the race? I'm trying to think. There's a lot of excitement. So can you just explain a little bit about what the ALUT race is? And then we'll talk about how we met and then a bit about you as a runner and what the running scene's like in Germany.
Yeah, sure. So I should start about the ALUT race.
Yes. Yes, please.
Yeah. So... this race I noticed about, found out now about 1 year ago. It's a race in southern Portugal along the Algarvian coast from, in this year, from Alcoutim in the east. It's lying at a river, and if you watch over the river, there is Spain. So you are in the eastern part of southern Portugal.
And that was that. Did you think that was pretty cool? I didn't. For some reason, I didn't realize that we were going to be that close to the border. But then, obviously, if you're running across the Algarve, but as a starting location, I thought it was great, wasn't it? Because they supply the bus within the entry fee from Faro, don't they, up to the start?
Yes. They supplied the bus. I think everyone had to check in online if he or she wanted to use the bus. We did that some days before the race. And I was aware that we were starting there because I checked the track before the race. it was funny because when we started there driving there, if you remember, on the other side, on the Spain side, there was a castle on the hill.
Yes.
And as we approached to Alcoutim, the long time, you could see the castle and think, oh yeah, are that some of the mountains we got to cross? And when we arrived, we said, okay, we are not going there because that is the other direction, that is Spain. but yeah, it was a really nice little town. Only problem was I tried to buy something to drink, and there was only a small restaurant, but no shop. So really small town. I think there maybe probably was something, but I didn't find at that moment.
Was that going to be vital to your race? Was that like some like a water for your hydration, or was it just beforehand?
It wasn't vital. I just thought about I talked to Luca Papi before the race, and as you remember, Luca Papi did the challenge 360 degrees 1 or 2 weeks before that.
Yes.
And they suffered from the heat, and at the ALUT, I think it was mandatory to carry 1.5 liters of water, and yep. I think Luca had about 2.5 liters because he absolutely didn't want to go to run dry. And
so it's his fault we had the biblical rain night one then.
Yeah. And so I just thought maybe it's a good idea if I just, you know, buy a little bottle of water. Even I had, I think, three full soft flasks and one extra for an exchange. But I said, maybe it's not a bad idea to carry a little bit more water, because the aid stations are, the first aid station was, I think, 35 kilometers away, so more than 20 miles. So that was why I took a little walk to find a shop, but I couldn't find anywhere where I could buy a small plastic bottle of water.
Ah, right, I've got you. And then your preparation for the race, what was your training for it?
I did no special training. I think since the last 10, 12 years, since I'm running a lot, I'm about 5,000 to 6,000 kilometers a year. So I'm constantly in training. And,
yes,
you know, I'm not a fast runner. So I go to the races, and if possible, I like to finish, but I'm not competing about the podium or something like that. So I did no special training. This wasn't my main race this year. This year, I think my main race was UTMB. So I spent, especially the last 2 years, a lot of time in the Alps. And I thought this is not going to be that hard because there are no alpine mountains. But on the other hand, it's not an easy race. But I did no special operation, special preparation, sorry.
Apart from 10, 12 years of 5,000 miles a year.
not miles, yeah. Kilometers.
Kilometers. And yeah. Then if we talk about the terrain, I was lucky enough to be in the first aid van for the afternoon. And it is the heart of the Algarve, isn't it? Just such a variety. It's just you know, going. I like the little whitewashed villages, you know, the trail, the track, and everything.
Yeah.
At what point did the rain start? Because the race starts at what time? Was it 12 o'clock?
Race started at 2:30 p.m.
Yeah, 2:30. Yeah.
And that meant we had about 3 hours in sunlight, and then it went dark. And the weather was okay as long as there was sunlight. And I think with the darkness, the rain set in. And there has been a lot of rain in that week prior to the race. You know, it's in terms of runnable. I think that's in a normal case a very runnable trail run, because there are not technical trails. Mostly are good ways. Problem is with the rain. The most parts are heavy terrain with red earth. I don't know the exact term. Kind of clay, something like that. If that's right, it's very sticky, and the rain made it muddy. So it was slippery, muddy, and with some hours in the rain, that was quite difficult, and. We had several rivers to cross, rivers.
and they were because I noticed the change in weather, and because I was going around the car with the organizer Bruno, the pickup van and stuff, and then it sort of like twigged with me as a supporter's point of view, Christoph. I was like, oh, hang on a minute, we're not in Wales. How prepared are the runners for this? Because as you say, you you mentioned the other competitor that didn't want to get dehydrated because of the weather, and then I first met you in a kitchen at a school aid station where you were bent over at the time shivering, but I wasn't quite sure if you'd had injury or hypothermia. Can you explain what led to that and what happened?
I don't remember exactly. Was that the first aid station or the second?
I think it was the second. It was about midnight, something
like
that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That was the second station. I had that was the point where I unfortunately had to drop out. I think I was running 50 kilometers in the race. In the darkness, and I had a bad step with my right foot, so I kind of fell, and that hurt my whole right side and my back. and I just couldn't run properly. You know, it was it was some kind of stumbling, and I did that for about 20-25 more kilometers, but it hurt, it didn't make sense, and I was slowing down. You know, I run on a team with a close friend of mine, and so it in the end it didn't make sense, and because of that I couldn't go with the same speed as I like to. I, on the other hand, got cold because my body and at that speed didn't produce enough heat, so I got cold. The back hurt it. I couldn't move properly. So then I had to decide to drop out at the race. Was very, very disappointed.
Did you get picked up, or did you manage to get to an aid station?
I ran until that aid station. It was still an hour before a cutoff. But I got there on my own feet. That was not a problem, but it didn't make any sense to go on from that. But I took, nobody had to pick me up. We met some people of the staff, I think 10 or 12 kilometers before, because they were searching for one female runner that wasn't showing up on the track because of her tracker didn't work.
Yeah,
but I don't want to cause any troubles to the team. You know, they did a fantastic job supporting the runners, and
they're incredible.
So I don't want to cause any troubles for them, and make no additional troubles. So I made it to the second aid station. And as you remember, it didn't take a long time, and they put us in the car, and I think drove us to aid station 4.
Because that's how we met. Because I was going round, and then this is the second of attempt as a podcast with Christoph. Because I was saying, "Wow, this is amazing! Let's do the podcast," and I was so excited. I was holding the phone, but I wasn't actually recording, or I think I may have deleted it rather than pressing save. So Christoph has kindly come back on the show. And then, because you said to me, "Oh, there's lightning and everything." And I went, "Oh, yeah, you know, because you're a bit tired," because it was like we were doing a bit of traveling in the early hours of the morning. And then you showed me the video of the lightning and how close you were to it.
Yeah, that was on the on the course between aid station 1 and aid station 2. As you said, it's maybe kind of the heart of the Algarvian Mountains. And there was a lightning. And the flash. And then as a runner, I think you automatically start to count. And I came to 6. So in German terms, it means we are 2 kilometers away from the storm, from the flash, so that might be pretty close. But the track then took a turn to the left side, so we circled that, and I think about half an hour later we came to that spot where the lightning struck. And the photo I showed you was a tree.
I couldn't believe it.
The track.
Because I thought, you know, in the darkness of night and so on, and you've been awake for quite a long time and you're looking at stuff. And I was like, is he showing me some sort of like some rock movie, or what's going on here? And he goes, all right, when did this happen? Where was this? He goes, it was in the race a few hours ago. I was like, what?
Yeah,
there's absolutely like the flames coming out of this, out of the ember. So I think, oh my word. So... the race itself, will you be going back next year, or are you somebody who you move on, or you know, is it something that you're penciling in for the end of 2024 already? Blimey.
Yeah, I don't like unfinished business, and
love it.
Even now, you know, 3 weeks later, it okay, what happened happened. So it, I don't, it's, it doesn't help if I think a lot about that, but I need to go back because I want to do this race. And I know I can do it. If I was, yeah, maybe I didn't, how to say, yeah, I wasn't aware for a second and I did that wrong step. That can happen. That happens.
Yeah, it can.
You can fall, stumble. This time I hurt myself. It wasn't so bad. I'm fine now. But yeah, I need to go back and talk to Bruno. I said, I told you already, I met him throughout the race and I met him 2 days after with his nice wife in Faro. And we talked a lot. And if they are doing the seventh edition of this race next year, I'll be at the starting line definitely, because I want to finish this race in that beautiful landscape and with those cool people there.
And they are cool. And I think because I've been friends with Bruno and Louis and Claudia and some of the team since 2019 when I went out to do another race. And what becomes very apparent straight away is the community. It's like the family feel. It's just like everybody is involved. And, you know, as you say, with Bruno, it's because he's a runner himself. And he's very passionate about the country as well. And it's like everybody's in it together. And then, so for 2024... or, you know, your normal calendar, how many races do you do a year?
Quite a lot, I think. I don't know if you had an eye on my DUI statistics. So
I was just reading that like this morning. I was thinking, blimey.
Okay. No, I do a lot of races a year. About 20, some bigger races, many smaller races. I'm just fine. I'm not, I'm not a dad. I'm not married. I'm not in a relationship, so I can do whatever I like to. As long as it's these are the conditions and I'm able to run for this year, I like to do a lot of runs. Maybe things change in 1 or 2 years, I don't know. But for the next year, yeah, I have quite some plans.
And where are you racing next year? What are you up to?
Yeah, I will have... I think the first bigger races, I like to go to Paris in March, I think.
Okay.
It's the Paris Eco Trail. Funny thing is I like to travel a lot and I've been pretty all around the world, but I never have been in Paris. And special thing of that race is it's a 50-miler, 80K race. And the finish is on the Eiffel Tower. So I think
wow.
Pretty cool.
Yes. That is a cool idea.
And I think it's in mid-March mid-March should be. So I'm going there with, I think we are six fellow runners from Germany who attend that race together. And beside the race, that means a lot of fun with some friends.
Yeah.
And after that, I will be running the first edition of the Chianti Ultra Trail in the Italy, in the Toscana region.
Oh, very pretty.
And... for that, I will take some days of holidays, and on the way back, I like to go again to the Istria 100 in Croatia. I did that race 2 years ago, and it's a really great, organized, fantastic race. It's part of the UTMB World Tour.
Yeah.
But I just like to go there again because in the 2022 edition, we had just like in Portugal this year, we had back then in Croatia, terrible weather. It was a lot of rain. And I like to go there again next year and maybe have a little bit more luck. I finished that time, but I think I can do better at that race.
Yeah, oh, good stuff. And then the ones coming up for the summer, what you doing? I'm just scrolling down your up and down the DUV. Wow, this is just like a tick list of places that, you know. What was the ultra trail in the Alps like that you did in 2021?
You mind the Julian Alps?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's fantastic race. Back in that days, it was their first edition. And since 2022, they are also an UTMB World Tour race. They weren't in 2021. As you see, I finished seventh. would have been seventh place for me if there were be if there would have started more and better runners. But in that year, we were only 40 starters for the, I think the race is about 175 kilometers. So
wow. Yeah.
Around 110 miles. And over 50% dropped out. I managed to finish on the seventh position. And last year, that race, it starts in September. The 100 miler was canceled because of bad weather. I think this year they could make it. And it's also, I only can recommend it. The races in Slovenia, the Julian Alps Trail, as well as the Vipava Valley, which I did last year, fantastically organized. And it's a really great nature there.
And then, you know, to be able to run, you know, you say you haven't got any commitments. However, your body has got a commitment to you to be able to, you know, continue with the regularity of running and training. What are you eating? And, you know, do you do cross training as well as you know, just going for running and walking? Or yeah, so first of all, nutrition, what are you eating during the race, and then what are you eating, you know, throughout the week, sort of thing?
you watched me and you saw me. I'm not a skinny guy, so
no.
I'm eating enough. One thing is I struggle a little with weight, and I think my goal over the next month is to strip down some kilograms, because if you go to the Alps, it's all about the weight.
Yes.
I got some homework to do in that case. I'm a vegan, so I think eat all the stuff most vegans do. I'm not religious about that. It means I can say I'm 100% vegan, because I don't check if I eat a cake, if there is egg or milk in it, but I'm better say vegetarian. I don't eat meat or fish.
How long have you been vegan? The reason I'm asking, I spoke with, I think the listeners will have heard by now, an interview I did with a friend, Lloyd Watkin, and he's a vegan runner, and I'm going to be doing Veganary for January, as just as a little project to see if I can organize myself enough to eat vegan for the month. Now, toast, jam, Frazzles. Do you get Frazzles in Germany?
Like, I don't know what
they're like. If you imagine you go into a pub and then you ask for some like of the pub crisps. You got Frazzles and scampi fries. They're vegan now.
Okay.
Everything else, like the stuff that's actually good for you, this is where I'm going to go. So, like, you've got your salads, and you've also got your what are you of substance? Where are you getting your, you know, your big lumps of protein from, and so on? What are you, what do you eat?
I think everything, plants and salads. I like everything of that, and a lot of pasta and potatoes and soya stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are, I think in these days, it's not a problem to eat vegan if you want to, like, to avoid meat and stuff like that. So there are so many products that substitute that. I think that may have been way much harder 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'm just a vegan or vegetarian. I think a vegetarian meets it better in my way since 4 years, and I'm fine with that. I never ate cheese. I hate cheese, so that wasn't
a problem. You're very, very lucky, Crystal. Yeah. I love the stuff. I love cheese. I love being around cheese. I love people who eat cheese. Yeah. I've got a thing for cheese. However, I think, you know, if you set your mind on something, you can go without and find other things. So you're fueling for, say, dueling a 100-mile race. What are you taking with you? Did you say you were taking Tailwind when we talked?
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I have Tailwind with me. I had also prepared Tailwind, the powder, in my drop bags throughout the race.
Yeah.
Just because I know this works for me throughout a race, and I don't get a blown up stomach. I can, I'm fine with that, and I can be running, and it works for my body. And I think for the Alut, it was mandatory to carry about 1,000 calories.
Yes.
And I took some bars with me. I had some Clif bars and just some local cereal bars from the supermarket.
A Clif bar's vegan?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I didn't know
some that. At least some of them, yeah.
Some of them are. That's good to know.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's surprising how many of the, like, the breakfast bars and so on in the local supermarkets are vegan. I'm going to ask you a question now. What will you have for Christmas lunch, Christmas dinner, vegan-wise?
You know, it's in my family, a tradition was until some years ago fondue. You know what that's, fondue
that's,
is?
That's cheese, isn't it?
Not necessarily. That's how the Swiss people do it. But in Germany, fondue is more like you have a pot with oil in it, boiling oil, and then you put different types of meat in there. So not with cheese.
I have been, and I think a lot of our listeners have been, no way, because all I've always thought is, like, you're dipping it into the, you know, the cheese, but you can have fondue with meat.
Yeah, that's the famous Swiss fondue. No, man, that's not for me. So now I'm just having a fine dinner with a curry and with fried vegetables and all the stuff, but without meat.
Ah, that's it, yeah, because you've got the different curries you can do. And then, do you have a protein shake or anything like that? Or are you, you know, after you finish a race, or, you know, to help train, or are you sourcing your nutrition from, you know, like vegetables and everything, rather than having things that have been processed?
I have some protein shakes here at home, but I don't use them on a regular basis. Normally, throughout the week, I think I got enough protein, you know, through stuff like peas and beans and all that. So I eat quite a lot of or soya beans, pretty lot of stuff like that. So that works fine for me, and I have a checkup about that every year, and says I'm fine with my nutrition as it comes to vitamins and all the stuff your body needs. So that goes.
And then,
sometimes it's hard throughout the races because, at the bigger races, I think it's no problem. I remember the tour last year. You always find some pasta with tomato sauce, which works just fine for me. Even if it's a longer race and on the third or fourth day, you just can't see it anymore. But in that place, you don't eat for fun. It's just to make the body work. Sometimes smaller races, if they are not prepared for a region runner, I find anything. I find cookies, and as I said, if there is, I don't ask them, are these cookies vegan or is there milk in it? In that case, it's okay for me, and I eat whatever I can get, except I don't eat any meat or fish or chicken or all that stuff. That's a totally no-go for me. And if there is some cake or some cookies and there might be probably an egg or milk in it, then it's okay for that moment.
Okay. Well, that's good. And then, as well as fueling the body, we're talking big style now, because in terms of foot management, how are you getting through all these races with your feet? What are you doing to look after them? Sort of thing. Do you tape your hot spots? Do you tape your feet, or are you wearing a liner sock? Or how does your foot management work?
I think I'm pretty lucky with that. I don't have many problems with my feet, so I don't suffer any problems with a blister. I think the most important thing about that is that you have well-fitting shoes, and I have a variety of shoes that work well with me, and especially after this year. I think 23 had so much races with constant rain. I remember, I think we talked about race in Austria, the Kitz Alp Trail in Austria, also a part of the UTMB World Tour, and it was 2 days of constant rain there, but I had no problems with my feet. I have something with me in the aid stations, change socks and put something on my feet. I'm searching for the right word, not Vaseline, but something like that to keep the feet hydrated, so that the skin doesn't dry out, and like a balsam or something like that.
Yeah.
And if some fresh socks and the drop bag, or if I know really I'm going through a heavy rain the next hours, then I have some pairs of sealskin socks, so means waterproof socks, and works quite well.
And then, for the race with all the rain, had you looked at the forecast before this one in Austria you were talking about, and what did you have on your feet? What was your trainers, or sneakers or shoes, wherever you're listening from, what were you wearing?
I was wearing my Hoka Speed Gold 5s.
Yeah.
I think a shoe that for me personally fits very well, and I wear that trail shoe very often, except very technical terrain. And then I think for very technical terrain and high up in the mountains, I need a shoe with a little more grip. But on most parts, the Hoka Speed Goat works fine for me. And I watched the forecast. It was a little tricky because I stayed in Faro, I think 3 or 4 days before the race.
And it's warm.
Yeah, and Faro is warm, and the forecast said nothing about rain. Maybe some 20 minutes and small rain.
Yeah.
And as well, I checked some other bigger cities around Algarve. I should have been a little smarter and check the small towns in the mountains. And I didn't expect that in the mountains there or in the hills, there was such a different weather than from the coast. You remember when we, at the end of the race, we were at the finish line in Sagres. And I was speaking with my friend Gabi, who she was still in the race. Even if they were just 20 or 30 kilometers away, they had rain while we in Sagres had sunshine. So yeah, that there's a big variety of weather on a small area. And
And to give the listeners an idea, whenever you guys were out, we'd got to this school and there was like an area that had been set up for firemen to sleep in during the hot months, so they're closer to where there's potential fire. So that's where we're sleeping. And the windows were absolutely rattling, as if we were in, like I say, like a lighthouse on an island. It was like, wow, this is big weather. And, you know, I put a video up of people coming in and just how well looked after everybody was by the, you know, by the team for the race. It was just great to see. And then, so your first race now for 2024, what have you got before Paris, or is that when you start?
No, first race starts right in the first week after in the new year. It's I think 6th of January. It's a race in Cologne. Cologne has a so-called green ring around the city. So a ring of parks and all that stuff. And that's a small ultra, about 63 kilometers. It's organized by a close friend of mine, and I think this time is the fifth or sixth time he does that. And the fun part is you decide which way you want to go around. So you choose your bib number, and if it's what's the name? If you have a 2 or a 6 or a 8 or a 4 or a 0, so what's how you call that? A straight number, or
So you could you be running towards people and they could be running towards you?
Yeah.
Well, that's fun, isn't it?
You know, every bib ending on a 0 or 2 or 4 or 6 or 8 is running clockwise. And every bib ending on a 1, 3, 7, 5, or 9 is running counterclockwise. So that means you meet a lot of people in the same race.
That's a great idea. So, do you only find out on the day of the race whenever you get your numbers?
No, you can choose that when you sign in for the race. So everybody chooses his number out of the remaining three numbers. So you can plan that.
That's fun, isn't it? Because you'll probably see people and you'll think, hang on, they're going faster than me or slower than me.
Absolutely. And it's the special thing about that is, you know, if the fast runners that are battling, they know the first runners know when they meet, and they have an idea about, oh damn, I meet them at this place, I need to go faster if I want to win. So that's quite exciting for especially the people in front of the race or someone who is competing with another runner.
I like that. That's a great one. That's a great idea. Listen, I can't thank you enough, because I'm sure we'll meet again somewhere, possibly next year before the race in Portugal. But thanks ever so much for coming on the show, and have a great Christmas.
Yeah, you also. Thank you very much for the invitation. And yeah, I followed your podcast. In the past, I didn't listen to so many English-speaking podcasts, but now you're on my list.
And, oh, I appreciate I'm... that. Oh, thanks very much. And you're going to have... And listen, whenever you fancy, because I saw that you've done the Centurion race in the UK. You know, if ever you fancy a visit over to Wales, let me know. We'll, you know, we'll give you a place on one of the beautiful, brutal ultras here. It's great, great to see you. And I'll make sure that we've got like some good weather.
Yeah, I absolutely like to do that. As I told, unfortunately, next year, I think at that time in July, I'm already at the Val d'Aran in Spain.
Oh, wow. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a brutal one. That's really fantastic.
When do we start? Well, we've got the She Ultra. You can't do that because that's all for women. And then we've got the. We got the Pilgrims in June, then we got July for the Welsh Ultra Trial, and then we've got possibly one in August, then we've got a Backyard Ultra in August, and then we've got one in November. But yeah, I think our paths will cross at one point before.
If not in 2024, definitely in 2025.
Hey, definitely. Hey, listen, thanks ever so much for your time, Christoph, and you and your family and friends have a great Christmas.
Thank you. Well, same to you.
Cheers now.
To all the listeners.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Have to get up right now. Or you can still listen to this if you're just lying down. We've got Sarah Donoghue. Is that how you say your surname, Sarah?
That would do. Donoghue.
from the food bank run. I was first made aware of this when I was over at the National Running Show 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
And Sarah, can you tell people a little bit more about this? Brilliant, and I'm going to say the word brilliant incentive because it's just fantastic. And yeah, if you can just tell us a little bit about it, and then I'll ask you about how you came up with the idea and so on. Yeah, so what is the food bank run?
So it's a really simple idea. The main aim is to fill your local food bank with changing a training run and running with backpacks of food to your local food bank and donating that food. So it's the running community helping the local community.
I just think that's such a simple and brilliant idea. When did you come up with the idea?
So it wasn't actually my idea. James Musselwhite is our chairman of our running club. And in 2018, he phoned me up and said, got this idea. I want to put backpacks on and donate to our running club, to our food bank, local food bank. I'm going to change the training night and just run to our local food bank and donate. Can you help me sort it out, Sarah? Because I'm the welfare officer. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. James comes up with so many great ideas, and then I kind of like go, okay, let's how are we going to do this? And it just happened to be at a mothers and toddlers group at the time, and the lady next to me was one of the people that ran the food bank, and I said, how would this work? And she said, yeah, it's a great idea. We can just do a collection at night, and you can just run to a point and then donate. So we did that, and I just thought maybe 20 runners might come, and I lost count at 70 runners. Wow. From our running club, and they all came, and it kind of like was born from that, really. And yeah, it was an incredible night. So we.
And then what time did you do that? Was it like a training run night sort of thing?
Yeah, so we just changed it. So February is a really difficult time of year for food banks because October, they have harvest. So lots of schools donate at that point. Christmas, lots of people donate at that point. But January and February, the donations drop off a bit, but actually they are the times that people really struggle. It's when the bills really hit. So we decided to do it either in January or February. That's why we did it. We just changed one of our training runs. And then it's kind of like gone on from there, really.
What a great idea. And then how would, say, if you got somebody, I'll say, first of all, with like people from a club, how would they like organise it?
So what kind of like, do you want me to tell you why we went nationwide?
Yeah.
It kind of like adds to the story a little bit, because yeah. it was just our club doing it. For until 2021, we managed to squeeze in a 2020 one before life changed, we knew it. And then we couldn't do 2021, but we were really very, very keen to start it up again. I had like a phone call from Jim again saying we really want to start it up in 2022. It was like brilliant, but I said I won't be able to do much because I was pregnant with our fifth child. Right. And so I said, I'll help with the background stuff, but I won't be able to do any lifting or anything like that. And then sadly, our baby was stillborn. It was horrible. I kind of like just pulled out of everything and pulled out of what we were going to do. When I came out of hospital, our neighbour came out with a meal, and it was just a lifesaver, really, because I had four children at home with my husband. We were just trying to deal with the grief and everything. Yeah. And she said, for 2 weeks, we've got the community feeding you guys. There'll be meals being brought round. And it was like, as I was feeding myself, I was kind of like getting better, and it was just incredible. So my son came up with this list of 100 things to make us smile again. And one of the things was to pay it forward.
Yeah.
So you have maternity leave, even though you don't have a baby at home, you still get maternity leave. So I was at home on maternity leave without a baby. I thought, right, I'm going to do this list. And I looked at the pay it forward bit, and I was like, I need to do the food bank run again, because that's the way that we can pay it forward for,
yep,
pick on his list. And as I was standing there, and it was such a big run that night, honestly, there's over 100 runners came. And I just was like, we need to take this nationwide, because I could feel what the families would feel like being fed when you're struggling is such an amazing thing. When you just aren't expecting people giving you food, it's a crazy feeling that you just are able to just meet that basic need, so you can go, right, what else can we do to get us out of this situation?
And so
I wrote to all the clubs in the country and phoned them up and messaged them, and they all kind of started saying yes. So last year we had over 500 runs happen across the country, and thousands of runners put a backpack on and ran their local food bank, which I just find this really blows my mind, really.
I think, that's just incredible. And I think, especially just going through what you did and then doing what you've done, that's goosebumps for me here. It's quite emotional. What you're saying, and how communities really do help each other, and on the nationwide side of things. And what was this award that you won, Sarah, at the National Running Show?
Yeah, so it's Charity Initiative of the Year, which just blows my mind, because was not expecting it. Just the fact that people voted for just an idea that they came on board. So it's really represents all the runners that have done a food bank run, that they help their local community. And that was a special night, actually.
Oh no, it was what, you know, I was there giving the award for something else, but it was great to see you and the family there as well. You know, that was like, oh, this is really cool, because the kids looked as if they were having a great time.
Yeah, they loved it. Really loved it. They got to meet Mo the next day, which was just blew my son's mind. He brought a library book from school, one of Mo's books, hoping to get it signed. And Mo signed it for him, and he was going to showing it. So real special, special time.
That's great. And just before we go on about how people say organise the... listeners that are experiencing, you know, financial difficulties or, you know, struggling this time of year, as you say, with bills or something, how do people go about, you know, getting food from a food bank? You know, how does it work?
You have to be referred. So food banks tend to have a few schemes that go on, but it is done by referral system, and that can be through any professionals, really, social workers, teachers, just doctors. It's just kind of like reaching out and asking for that help. So that's, I think that's the hard bit, isn't it? It's when you need help, is actually admitting that you need a bit of help. So that is the tough bit. I think that's where sometimes people go under the radar. But if you go to the food bank, they'll be able to tell you how to get a referral and explain what, because it is different around the country as well, different counties and things. And also some places do, when people are struggling, you can pay £5, you get like £15 worth of food. So there's lots of different schemes that each food bank kind of runs a little bit differently, but it is done by mainly referrals. I'm a teacher, so I know that quite a lot of the referrals come from school, and the head teacher can actually put that. And there's lots of other things that can happen as well, like the children get free school meals so they can get fed at school. There is lots of help out there for when people are struggling.
And, you know, I know that pride's a big thing as well with asking for help, especially financial help. Is there a way that people could contact the food bank without physically going there? Do you know what I mean? If they feel like a little bit shy around going to ask for help, because I know the one in Pasali has got a direct messaging on Facebook, so you can converse on there. So I was just wondering, you know, do you go and pick the food up from there, or do they deliver it, or how does it work?
I think each one works slightly different. I know the food bank that we go to, they have a few parcels that they actually go and deliver for families that are struggling and they can't actually get out due to illness. But it is kind of mainly come to the food bank, and it's run like a mini shop almost. You go in and you choose what you'd like that week, so you're getting things that you know your children are going to eat. I know the one that we donate to, they've got actually some support with the local fruit and veg shop, so they they get cheaper veg, so that actually they're doing that. And they also do like a meal deal type thing. So they have bags of actual all the ingredients that you need to do for spaghetti bolognese. So you've got a whole meal that they can give to families, so that actually it kind of like takes out that pressure of what am I going to do? What am I going to cook? How am I going to cook it? And it's got it all there. So it's really good what's going on.
I think that, you know, it's fantastic. You know, where we've got the one here is in the local church. So it's right in the middle of town, but as you say, you know, we're a rural area, and also maybe people who can't travel for, you know, the facilities to get it out. And then, so if you want to put a food bank run on, how would you do it?
So we've got our Facebook group, which is great, because it really is quite an inspiring group to be part of. And so I do really say to people to go and have a look on there. And also we've got a website, and we've got like a 5-point guide to on how to set up a food bank run, especially if you're doing it as a club, about things like making sure the food bank's open, making sure that they know that you're coming, and they might actually open on your training night. I know the one that we run, because we're such a big club, and we, it's a big donation that we end up providing, they open specially so that we can meet up and see how it's run. They do a little talk for us. So the main thing is to set up a time, then to get the donations, think about how you're going to donate, whether it's, I know some running clubs have run to a supermarket, run around the supermarket and bought their donations and then put it in the baskets at the end, you know, when you see the food bank baskets.
Yeah.
Which I think is a lovely idea. Some park runs have done a bring a donation to park run, and then they sort out delivering it to the food bank after the park run, which is great. A preschool did it. So they all ran with a little tins holding it. It was really cute. And they found, I know a scout group, they ran to the supermarket and they all had a pound and they went and bought something in the supermarket, and then the supermarket then matched all their donations as well and then donated to the food bank, which I thought was amazing. They all walked back with their little bags back to the scout hut. It's amazing what people are doing. They're being very creative, but the main aim is to fill up the food bank. So how my club does it is that we set a date, contact the food bank, and then that night we run with bags on our backs. We also have a car, so if somebody wants to be very generous and they bring too much to run with, then they can put it in the car, and then we meet at the food bank at the end and then have a drink there, which is a really lovely night, because it's like doing something that's not, I find running can be quite selfish sometimes, because it's about your exercise and your PB and how you're doing, but this is like running with a purpose to help somebody else, which is, it's just this really special night. It's one of the best nights that we do at our running club, which is great.
And how many times do you go a year, or is it just the February that your club does?
Our club does this the February, but from it, lots of the runners now regularly donate because of the awareness that it's brought.
Yeah.
But other clubs have done it once a month, or they're doing it once a term type thing. So it's really up to you. But it's that aim to be the running community helping the local community.
And then how would, say, like a local running club promote it? You know, would you suggest that they promote it on all their socials, to say perhaps non-members could come as well?
We do. I mean, I think it ends up being a little bit like dodgy ground a little bit. Like, is it a run kind of that you're setting up rather than a training run? But it's a nice way of getting new people into the running.
Yeah.
Also, it's we promote it. A lot of my friends like to come along on that evening, and now have been, they'll come along to the running club on a Tuesday.
Yes.
So it's a good entry point as well, because actually it's something a little bit different. People are interested, they like a challenge, so we do have a lot of people on that night, but it just continues as well through the year, and our club's grown because of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a great way for clubs to encourage new members, because it's done in a non kind of race training environment. It's social. And then $60 billion question, somebody who isn't a runner but they want to take part in the evening, are walkers allowed to go, maybe if they set off like half an hour or an hour beforehand to meet up as well?
It really is how you do it. I've had a walking club do a food bank run, and it's just the fact it's called food bank run, it doesn't really matter. I've had a cyclist do it as well, a cycling club do it. It really doesn't matter. It's just the idea. So my parents have done a food bank run where they collected a load of food and then donated it. You know, if you want to go for a walk and with a bag of food, you know, it's a purpose for your walk, isn't it? And to help somebody else. Yeah, anyway, don't mind. I'm not a fussy.
Brilliant. So, and then the, because what I'm thinking now is, say, if we reach out where I live to all the different clubs.
Yeah.
So, you know, running club, football club, rugby club, and they all go from, you know, an area. And it just, as you say, it builds the community sort of feeling. I was going to say as well, is there like a list of food for the food bank? Because I know that there's perishables and so on that isn't recommended. Well, you know, what's the list, or where is the list of what to bring and what not to bring?
So we advise people to contact their food bank and then ask them, because sometimes they might have had an influx of baked beans. They don't need any baked beans at that point. But what they really do need is pasta. So we just really encourage people to, before their run, phone up, find out, and then put a list out. And lots of the running clubs have made their own list. And we have a logo. It's a shoe inside a tin. And lots of running clubs have added their own stuff to that logo. We're not fussy about whatever happens, as long as food gets to people that need it. That's what we're after. So putting that logo on a list and your logo of your running club or your area of your run, it's just a way of just promoting what's going on. And that's really, really nice way of actually making sure that people get the right food, really.
I just love this idea. It's simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, so for people that want to take part or set it up, have a look on the Facebook group and have a look at the information, then phone up your local food bank to see what nights fit well with them as well as yourself, but also to get a list of what is required locally for them, because they'll be able to produce that. Also, if somebody is experiencing difficulties or they know somebody that's experiencing difficulties, the referral process is speak to a teacher, speak to social services, or speak to a doctor, or even the local policeman.
Yeah.
You know, with
Well, just phone up the food bank and say, what's your referral system? I'm looking out because I need some help. And they will be able to help you and guide you what you need, because it's different for every family.
Yeah, exactly. And then what I was going to suggest for any race directors that are listening to this, because I'm definitely going to put it into place, our races, if you give an option where the competitors of the race, because we, you know, many of the races will have thousands of competitors, if they bring you know, three items for a food bank to registration, and then we'd be able to put them in tote boxes and then take them after the event's been on. I think that's a great catchment area for people, and you know, they're doing their bit and helping the community that they're, you know, coming to run in, which is I think what became really apparent in the National Running Show is the running community and the sense of purpose it gives to people. And this, I think, Sarah, is just absolutely fantastic. It's such a wonderful and an organic idea as well. So great stuff. And then yourself, what races have you got coming up, or are you busy enough with this?
And this has taken up a lot of my time. I'm also a teacher, and a youth worker and welfare officer, but I have got London Marathon coming up, so I am training for that. That's my race that I'm focused on. I'm just doing running for enjoyment at the moment, and the London Marathon is coming up soon. So
imagine, right, Sarah, not that I want to put a seed of thought in your head, imagine if we got in contact with the London Marathon organisers and said, if you ask competitors if they'd like to bring two or three items for the food banks of London, that would be, I think that's a little bit of a project that
We'll get on the phones. Is it still Virgin? Is it still Richard Branson?
Oh, I don't think it is Virgin anymore.
Who's the London? Oh, is it New Balance?
Yes. Yeah. So if anybody wants to help get that idea, that would be fantastic. I'm happy to help in any way. You know, I reached out last year to everybody and I haven't had any response back from them. So any help, because it's literally me on the phone to people asking to get this idea out. And I'm amazed by how many people have helped me and, you know, a running brand, Runner. I don't know if you heard of them, but
yeah,
they've helped me a lot with the technical side. I'm a primary school teacher. I don't do websites, stuff like that. So they've helped me with stuff like that. So, yeah, any help, that's, you know, I'm not precious about this. I'm just passionate about getting food to people. So anybody that wants to send the message out, please do. I'm after the help.
I think that's fantastic. And come on, New Balance. We'll start knocking doors.
Amazing.
But it is, I don't know, have you seen the film Shawshank Redemption, Sarah, where he phones up, he sends letters day in, day out for the books in the library. You know, it's sort of, I think if you've got a passion for something, it gets it done. I'm really excited about the one that we're going to do this neck of the woods, because your passion just comes across and it just takes everything away with it. Sarah, thanks ever so much for coming on the show. I'm going to let you crack on. What you got planned for the rest of the day? What are you up to?
So it's housework day, I'm afraid. With four children, it's a lot of washing, and then I'm going to go for a run, actually. So it's my day to get everything back sorted. And also, I've got lots. We were in The Guardian this week.
Saw it.
They did an amazing article, and since then, my phone's been non-stop, people getting in contact with me. So that's really great as well. So I'll be also doing food bank run stuff as well. Which is exciting.
The piece in The Guardian, people can still read it online as well. And it just gives you, and I'll also put the notes in here for everybody to listen. I was going to say, do you ever play Danger Dishes?
Danger Dishes, no.
Yeah, this is something I've invented recently, and I'm just, I thought I'd bring it to the podcast listeners. You know, when you're saying that you're doing housework, what I say to is whenever everybody leaves the house and there's dishes on the side, I say to my wife, yeah, no problem, I'll do those for you now, but I leave it until 4:30. So I timeline myself that, so danger. So what I'd say is take the rest of the day off, Sarah. Don't do any housework until about 40 minutes before everybody's due to come home, and then just use it as a manic workout. Oh, clubs. Brilliant. Sarah, listen, thanks ever so much for coming on the show today, and just all the best for, well, the months, the years coming with the food bank run.
Thank you so much, appreciate
Brilliant.
It
Brilliant. Bye, Sarah. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.